Good morning, University of Manitoba campus, and welcome to UMFM's information and entertainment program, Your Campus Today, for Friday, October 26th. I'm going to be your host, David Tufain. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11:30 a.m., we bring you all the U of M news that's fit for your ears, plus keep you in the loop on just a few of the great events going on here at the U of M campus that you need to know about. On today's show, a student group accuses the U of M of anti-Indigenous racism. Awards of distinction are awarded with the Faculty of Nursing, and the U of M press releases an important new book that sheds light on a dark time in Winnipeg's history. All this and more coming up next right here on Your Campus Today. A group within the Canadian Federation of Students, CFS, has condemned the U of M for what it calls anti-Indigenous racism within the university community. From the utter disregard and disdain of the only Indigenous administrator to the blatant disrespect for the safety and security of Indigenous students, it is no secret that the University of Manitoba does not give concern to issues that affect Indigenous people who are working for or enrolled in the institution, read a public statement released by the Circle of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit students. The release was signed by the group's chairperson, Shanice Ann Steele, and National Executive Representative Chance Papanikis. The statement said Vice Provost Indigenous Engagement Lynn Lavallee requested and was denied a meeting with the U of M's Presidential Executive Team on behalf of the U of M Indigenous Student Association, or UMISA, to discuss instances of anti-Indigenous racism on campus, namely an experience in which a student enrolled in a philosophy course endured a racist discussion in the class. It should never be this hard to contact the school president and to have a sit-down with the president and discuss something as important as anti-Indigenous racism, and other forms of racism as well. Papanikis said, "That is so anti-democratic of a process. You know, we should be able to schedule a meeting within the next couple of days and have a sit-down with the president and be able to voice our concerns, but that hasn't been the case." U of M spokesperson John Donakis would neither confirm nor deny whether the presidential executive team actually turned Lavallee away. "What's critical is what are the values, the intentions, and the actions that follow," John Donakis said. "And there's a commitment on the part of the executive team to hear directly from Indigenous students, and the Vice Provost and the Provost are working together to make that happen." John Donakis added that the university was committed to creating pathways to Indigenous achievement, and said the university had proved this commitment already. That commitment is being demonstrated through the mission statement and the strategic plan, which states that the core priorities of the university are uniquely strengthened by Indigenous knowledge and perspectives. The CFS statement suggested UMISA will explore securing further autonomy from the university as a student group. "I can say, though, that this is something that we've been talking about for years, and I think that this year's executive is ready to go ahead with that," Papanikis said. He claimed an attempt was made by UMISA to meet with UMSU President Jacob Sanderson on the issue last week, but the meeting was ultimately canceled after concerns with the timing came up. "When it comes to talking about something so important as basically Indigenous sovereignty, we don't want to meet for just half an hour," Papanikis said. "This is something that takes, if not hours, but days of discussion, potentially weeks and months of discussion, because it is a huge step." Dr. Marilyn Cook has come full circle. As one of the first female Indigenous physicians to graduate from the U of M's Max Brady College of Medicine, Marilyn Cook is used to paving her own way. "I've incorporated traditional healing methods with Western medicine in my practice. When I first started talking about this in the early 90s, you could hear a pin drop in the room." Now the Cree woman from Mizapowistic Cree Nation and physician with Ongomizawin Health Services has been named a recipient of the National 2019 Inspire Award for her career working on reserve lands and advocacy work to reshape medicine in First Nations communities. Cook says she's come full circle practicing medicine in her hometown as a family physician in the Ongomizawin Indigenous Institute of Health and Healing within the U of M's Rady Faculty of Health Sciences. With roots growing up in a northern reserve, Cook says she was frustrated when she first began in the medical field as a nurse and saw the way Indigenous patients were treated in care. "I was watching people come from the communities into tertiary care centers and leaving with the same social problems and poor health outcomes. Nothing was changing." At the same time, the U of M has recently launched a program to recruit Indigenous physicians, having recognized a need to bridge this gap. When a friend gave her a pamphlet in the program, Cook said she felt like she was being given permission to take action on the changes she wanted to see happen. "I was accepted within the first intake, and because of my background as a nurse, was voted most likely to succeed." Despite her strong foundation of knowledge going into the program, the words of a tutor hindered her own belief in her abilities and nearly stopped her from graduating. I was told the rest of the students accepted me, but didn't think I was going to make it through. I let those negative words come into my being, and I failed my first year. When I came back, I told myself every day that I was going to do it. Going back, Cook recommitted to her goal of practicing family medicine in reserved communities by diversifying her residency to include specialties she would have to perform on her own as the sole physician in isolated fly-in communities. I had a talent for obstetrics, and my mentor wanted me to specialize in it, but I needed to learn things like pediatrics and orthopedics. I'd be doing my own casting in these communities. Cook also began to look outside of her medical training for healers and knowledge in traditional healing, an area she knew was missing from school and Western medicine. Her practice weaves together Western and traditional practices to ensure that the body, mind, and spirit of each patient is cared for. I said I can't just be practicing Western medicine because it's not going to fix this. I learned a lot about procedures, drugs, and disease, but not about what would help my community heal. All the drugs in the world are not going to fix the indigenous peoples of this land. Cook recounts the case that saddened her most, a 19-year-old patient needing treatment for acute renal failure who had endured family abuse growing up. Without family, Cook's clinic was the main source of support for the woman and her three children, but before Cook could return to the community for a visit, the patient had died by suicide. A year later, the patient's young son attempted to take his own life. This case cemented Cook's belief that traditional therapies would intervene with generational abuse and help families heal. Throughout my 30-plus years of being a physician, it's the ceremonies that I see getting the people back their identity and self-esteem and pride in knowing who they are. In addition to being a family physician within Ongomizawin Health Services at the University of Manitoba, Cook is now working with Manitoba Kiwatinoi Okimakawakanak, or the MKO, as part of clinical care transformation team to look at ways of incorporating traditional healing into Manitoba's healthcare system. By accepting the 2019 Inspire Award, Cook says she's been able to talk about the importance of the way she delivers care to patients and the need for this approach to be used across all First Nations communities. Now, through the Indigenous Institute of Health and Healing and Rady Faculty of Health Sciences at the U of M, Cook will be bringing this approach to speak to first-year medical students later this year, a class that includes her own daughter. I didn't grow up with ceremonies or traditional healing in my community. She has the advantage of knowing all this going into medical school. She's ahead. Representing the highest honor the Indigenous community bestows upon its own achievers, the Inspire Awards were created in 1993 in conjunction with the United Nations International Decade of the World's Indigenous Peoples. The awards recognize Indigenous professionals and youth who demonstrate outstanding career achievement. They promote self-esteem and pride for Indigenous communities and provide outstanding role models for Indigenous youth. The fall's graduating nurses were told the opportunities are endless at the annual College of Nursing pinning ceremony October 18th, preceding their University of Manitoba convocation. I'm most excited that nursing is extremely open-ended. There are so many different paths I can take. I may know where I want to go tomorrow, but in 10 years, it could be the complete opposite, said Jenna North, valedictorian for the fall 2018 graduating class. Organized by the Nursing Students Association, the pinning ceremony symbolically welcomes new nurses to the profession. After receiving their pin, they recited the University of Manitoba Bachelor of Nursing Pledge, recognizing their initiation into the brotherhood and sisterhood of nurses. By reciting the pledge, nurses vow to practice with integrity, uphold the standards of the profession, and dedicate themselves to confidentiality, collaboration, and quality patient care. You are part of an evolving legacy. You are the nurses, nursing leaders, and faculty of tomorrow. I am proud of your achievements and confident about our future with you as our new nursing leaders, said Dr. Netha Dick, Dean, College of Nursing, Rady Faculty of Health Sciences. Nursing is wonderful in the fact that we get a lot of positive reinforcement, whether that be from patients, but also feeling that you are contributing to a well and healthy society, added North. Those who spoke at the event highlighted the most important roles nursing plays in many lives. Being a registered nurse has been the most fulfilling and rewarding experience I've ever had, and you will be allowed to work in a variety of roles and settings, and most importantly, help make a difference in the lives of individuals, families, and groups that you will work with, said Mary Smith, Executive Director, Association of Registered Nurses of Manitoba. The fall's cohort of BN graduates is the first graduating class to study and complete their degrees using the new concept-based curriculum. Concept-based learning challenges students to think more critically about what they are learning and the situations they encounter by applying prior knowledge and experience. I'm most excited to practice. I've been in university for a while, and I'm finally ready to move on and apply what I've learned, says graduating nurse Shaylee Ducharme, a University of Manitoba Access Program student. University of Manitoba Access Program is located in Migasiagamic and provides a support network designed to increase Indigenous student success. Some of North and Ducharme's fondest memories from nursing come from their experiences in clinical settings. I had a patient who was very ill, and he had said to me that he had never had someone treat him with such respect and kindness, recalled North. I took that home with me and reflect on it daily. Ducharme started at the College of Nursing, wanting to become a community health nurse like her mom. I saw how she was able to look after our community back at home. She says, through clinical practice, she saw she could have the same impact. I was able to build trust with patients and have the opportunity to make a positive impact on their experience when accessing healthcare. The Arts Student Body Council, ASBC, began rolling out a composting pilot program October the 15th. Compost bins have been placed throughout Fletcher Argue, Isbister, and Tier buildings, and students are encouraged to use them to dispose of organic waste, including coffee grounds, food waste, and used paper towels. While the ASBC has been looking into the project since 2017, work only began this summer. ASBC Director of Sustainability Chantelle Delacuy has been a driving force behind the program. Delacuy joined the ASBC in August and immediately prioritized getting a composting program in place. She said a sizable portion of the U of M's current waste is compostable. When I was coming up with the proposal, I looked at the waste audit that the Office of Sustainability did last year, and over 50% of our waste is compostable, she said. There are other universities that have composting in place already, and I just thought that as one of the larger universities, or the largest in Manitoba, we should definitely have that as well to set an example for sustainability. These compost bins are first for the U of M, according to Delacuy. The ASBC experienced some pushback from the university administration. There's a lot of concern for maintenance and physical plant about things like fruit flies and smell and animals and those types of things, said Delacuy. So it took a lot of diligent planning to show them that I had a step-by-step way to deal with these issues so that they wouldn't have to, because we don't want to put extra work on the maintenance staff for this type of thing. It's entirely student-run, with student volunteers. Despite concerns from the university, Delacuy said she does not expect there to be any maintenance issues with the program. I have volunteers scheduled every evening to at least check on them, or empty them if needed, and clean them, so we're hoping that it's not going to be an issue. The program is what Delacuy calls a pilot project, and the first 8-month run is expected to cost anywhere from $1,500 to $1,800. According to the Office of Sustainability, the U of M will be covering 50% of the cost of pickup and looks forward to receiving data on this pilot. U of M spokesperson John Danakis said the maintenance concerns did not affect the university's support for the program. The university, through its Office of Sustainability, is fully supportive of the composting initiative, helping pay costs and attract volunteers, he said. Discussions regarding logistics and risks are necessary for the success of the initiative. Delacuy said the initial plans were scaled back to keep the program within budget. We originally wanted to start with 9 compost bins around the Faculty of Arts, Delacuy said. We reduced it to 5 for cost reasons. Otherwise, I think it's a really great investment for the Arts Student Body Council. Delacuy noted that the program is already inspiring students on campus. A couple of weeks ago, somebody from the engineering faculty contacted me because they're trying to get some composting in their faculty as well, she said. Delacuy said she hopes more student groups will take the initiative to grow the program with the goal of eventually having more compost bins spread out across campus. Long term, we want other student groups to kind of take the initiative to get it started so we can have it across campus, Delacuy explained. And then from there, hopefully the administration will see it's something that's really important to students here. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to be right back with more of Your Campus Today.
We couldn't have done it without you. UMFM's 4th annual listener funding drive, Pledge-O-Rama, is in the books, and the support was overwhelming and heartwarming. The money we've raised will go into station operations, ensuring you'll continue to get great programming you love year-round and allow us to make improvements and take new steps in serving this wonderful community. You came through for UMFM and we can't thank you enough, but here's one more attempt. Thank you for supporting UMFM.
Manitoba Opera has a fabulous deal for university students. Attend the dress rehearsals for just $13. See Mozart's Don Giovanni Thursday, November 22nd at the Centennial Concert Hall. Considered to be one of the greatest operas ever written, opera's most notorious bad boy gets his just punishment when the supernatural takes its revenge on the legendary Don Juan. Students, this is an amazing deal. You'll be sitting in a seat that regularly sells for over $100. The singers don't use mics. Their beautiful singing is in Italian with English translations above the stage, and as an added extra bonus, the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra playing live in the pit. For tickets and more information, go to mbopera.ca or call 204-942-7470.
The U of M's radio station, UMFM's annual pledge drive, Pledgerama, ended Friday after raising $41,578 for the station, more than $5,000 beyond its goal. The drive, which is in its seventh year, ran from October the 12th to 19th with a goal of raising $36,000. According to UMFM station manager Jared McKediak, Pledgerama has met its goal every year and has only become more successful over time. Our first goal was $20,000, and so every year I'm super stoked to say that we met and exceeded our goal, he said. So 7 years running and we're, you know, on track to hit our highest total ever this year. The funds raised from Pledgerama account for about 15 to 20% of the station's annual operating budget. The majority of the station's funding is provided by student levies from both undergraduate and graduate students. What we found was that it wasn't quite enough to, I guess, cover the cost of running the radio station, McKediak said. And so we started Pledgerama 7 years ago to help offset those costs. The original goal amount was set to cover two projects for the radio station. With the funds raised, UMFM plans to digitize its music library and add more ways to listen to the station around campus. The station is aiming to install 25 to 30 new listening stations around campus, similar to the one in the tunnel from the UMSU University Center to the Science Complex. McKediak said bringing UMFM to more spots around campus is more affordable than some might realize. During the last 16 years, it's become infinitely more affordable and doable, I guess, in terms of installing hotspots like that, he explained. Through the use of a microcomputer or a Raspberry Pi, and then using Wi-Fi wireless speakers, we can comfortably do one listening station for about $400 to $500. The concrete buildings on campus are not particularly conducive to radio waves and prevent on-campus listeners from tuning into their own station. It's kind of frustrating for us that probably the worst point of reception in the city for UMFM is on the U of M campus, McKediak explained. So we know that there's lots of support for the station here, and we hear a lot from students and faculty that they're listening to us, but it's all online, so we just want to make it easier. The station is looking to blanket the campus with coverage, installing the hotspots in lounges across campus and even on the Bannatyne campus. Even after the phone lines are closed, McKediak said donations continue to roll in 2 to 3 weeks after the drive ends. It's super awesome that the city of Winnipeg and sort of listeners, not only across the province, but people around the world who donate, McKediak explained. It means a lot to me and the staff, and of course the volunteers, that people believe enough in what we are doing to donate money toward it. According to Jared McKediak, UMFM receives approximately 450 to 500 donations each year. This, he said, is visible proof the radio industry is not going anywhere anytime soon. People talk about how radio isn't really a viable medium anymore, and obviously I'm biased, but I disagree with that, he said. And you know, seeing the number of donations go up every year, seeing the number of donors go up every year, seeing the response being what it is tells me that there are still people out there who embrace this medium. While some may be enjoying the first week of legalized cannabis, students living on the U of M Fort Garry campus have been left without a place to smoke. The U of M residences prohibit the use of cannabis anywhere on residence property, even after it was legalized in Canada on October the 17th, as per provincial legislation. In the days leading up to the legalization date, the U of M residences sent an email to all students living on campus summarizing the rules related to cannabis. The email states that marijuana cannot be recreationally consumed, prepared, cooked, grown, sold, produced, or delivered on residence property. First-time offenders who break any of these rules will be fined a minimum of $50. The email also notes that a delayed response in opening your door and or attempts to remove or mask the smell of smoking cannabis indoors will raise further suspicion and increase the severity of the sanction levied. Kaylin Campbell, a U1 student living in the residences across campus, said the rules were unfair. Obviously, if you're caught with marijuana in your room, you should be punished, but not if you have a delayed response in opening your door, she said. You could be in the shower or bathroom or maybe even sleeping, or have headphones in and not hear your door being knocked on. The 2018 and 19 residence contract has been updated to reflect the cannabis legalization estate, evidence of drug traces or drug paraphernalia, or the smell of a prohibited substance on residence property will be assumed to be conclusive of use or possession. Calvin Haas, a student living in residence, does not agree with the current residence policy on cannabis and is against the prohibition. It's out there. People are going to have it. People are going to use it, said Haas, but I get why they would want to have some control over it. Provincial legislation states cannabis cannot be consumed on public property, which includes the U of M campus. UMSU and the university are discussing the possibility of allowing edibles in private dorms. I wouldn't like to see marijuana allowed because it can smell, Campbell said, although I think that edible candies and stuff like that should be allowed as it doesn't smell. Justin Podol, a student who lives in residence, thinks the wording of the email and contract leaves room for interpretation that may be abused by security. I respect that the university can set their own rules and have their own policies against the use of cannabis, but I think if they're going to use more rules like that, they can't have them subjectively based, Podol explained. Evelyn Peters, Matthew Stock, and Adrian Werner released their new book, Rooster Town, on October 19th at McNally Robinson. It explores the fringe Métis community from which the book gets its name that was once situated on the outskirts of Winnipeg, what is now St. Norbert, Manitoba. Peters said one of her personal reasons for studying the settlement was purely academic. Virtually no research has been conducted that addresses the history of the Métis people in cities, she said. Work on Indigenous people and municipal colonialism has focused entirely on First Nations people. Métis people's experiences were very different, and we wanted to explore one aspect in those experiences. Rooster Town existed between 1901 and the late 1950s and was mainly populated by a large Métis community. The city of Winnipeg eventually began pressuring Rooster Town households to move into Winnipeg's poverty-stricken North End. The settlement began with six families that moved from the St. Norbert Parish, growing to 59 households, with an estimated population of 250 people. Low-income families, left in hardship after the First World War, also inhabited the town, resulting in the lack of a social safety net for the entire community as veterans began to return from war. In the book, it is noted that the City of Winnipeg property tax data shows residents' tenures varied. Some paid taxes on land that they were squatting on and purchased small plots of land. Despite the 1870 Manitoba Act, few Métis people received the title to their land. The book also noted that while self-building could lead to more financial stability, the need to pay property tax without the safety on Social Security could result in economic vulnerability. Peters said she hopes that the book will help inform readers about Métis history. While there is growing recognition that urban areas in Canada were built on First Nations land, there is much less recognition of the fact that, in some cases, cities were also built on Métis land, she said. Rooster Town also looks in the association between how poverty, unemployment, and depression led to residents trying to buy inexpensive land or squatting to access Winnipeg's labor market, while also having to share residences with other families during the Great Depression. Much of the city of Winnipeg is built on land that was originally Métis land, and that should be acknowledged. Rooster Town can be purchased on Amazon at McNally Robinson and at ufmpress.ca. And that does it for us here on Your Campus Today. We'll close out our show with a track from the new Micaiah McRaven record, Universal Beings. This is Black Lion. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to be back on Halloween with all sorts of tricks and treats. My name is David Devane. I've been me, you've been you. And this has been Your Campus Today. Your Campus Today is a collaborative production between UM Today, the Manitoban, the Department of Student Life, and this station, UMFM 101.5. Thanks for listening, folks. If you have a story you'd like us to feature or want to send in feedback, please email us at campustoday@umfm.com.